104.5 The Zone. This is the Midday 180.
Delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Second half of the show is here. Starting the third hour. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Glad you're with us. You can join us this hour. We're talking Tennessee football, SEC football, college headlines. 615-737-1045, our number. We're on the road with Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Drunk you makes bad decisions, so plan before you party. The Tennessee Highway Safety Office reminds you that fans don't let fans drive drunk. Doug, good morning. Hope you're doing well.
Doing very well, thank you. Looks like you all are, so yes. Good morning.
Good morning. I mentioned you yesterday whenever the announcement came down that Tennessee was hiring Kevin Steele as a defensive assistant. We're going to get into some heavy details with all of this, but I'd like to start with your thoughts on the perception of Kevin Steele and why he was hired. Because, you know, we all listen to Big Orange Sunday. And I know you're going to go heavy on this on Sunday with the details of why it makes sense, why Pruitt and Kevin Steele are working together every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Headline, though, depending on the different news outlets, and I'll point this one out, there are others that are saying the same thing. We mentioned this on the show yesterday as just initial thoughts that come to mind. But GoVols 24/7, as I'm scrolling through social media, with the headline today, Tennessee hasn't fired head coach Jeremy Pruitt yet. But it has done the next best thing. It has provided compelling evidence that Pruitt will be fired. This is in regards to Tennessee Vols hiring Kevin Steele indicates Jeremy Pruitt era is ending. What's your response to that?
Oh, I think that's about as 100% false as you could possibly get. It doesn't have anything to do with this hiring. This hire was made because Kevin Steele is an outstanding, and I'm going to get into a little more of it today, but I do mean outstanding hire at the University of Tennessee, outstanding coach. He was hired, and let me speak slowly on this because I know some people don't listen fast. He was hired by Jeremy Pruitt. Let me repeat that so I don't get misquoted on this. He was hired by Jeremy Pruitt. He was not hired by Philip Fulmer, period. That's not the way that it works. And if you just think about it for a second, why would a head football coach anywhere that has a strong buyout have a athletic director tell him who he must hire and still say there? No head coach worth his salt would do that, and Jeremy Pruitt is certainly a head coach worth his salt. So all that's a bunch of bunk. He's not going to be an interim coach. He's not going to be the defensive coordinator when Philip Fulmer takes over the program after he fires. All that barbershop talk is barbershop talk, and there's absolutely nothing to it at all. Now, people can choose to believe that, or they can choose to believe people who have don't even talk to anybody in the athletic department in an administrative capacity and come up with their ideas.
You know him well. What type of coach is he? You were mentioning him as one of the three candidates that Fulmer interviewed whenever Fulmer took over as the AD. But even prior to that, you were discussing Kevin Steele as a fit for Tennessee because of the makeup that he is as a coach. Why do you like him so much?
Well, he was one of the final three, probably was one of the final two. At one point, frankly, I thought that he probably was going to be the head coach. But didn't work out that way for various reasons. When I first came to Tennessee, Kevin, my first year there was a student assistant. He had been injured as a player and was working as a student assistant. He became a grad assistant in the early 80s, I think 81 or 82. He became an assistant coach on the defensive side of the ball after that. He left, then came back and was a defensive coach. He was the secondary coach when I took over in the middle of the season in 1988, took over the secondary. He moved up to the linebackers. When I was named coordinator at the end of that year, Kevin felt the need to leave and should have. I'm sure he wanted the job. He didn't get it, but he wanted the job. And since then has built a stellar career. I can't be any more plain than this, guys. They could not have hired anyone as good, not better. They couldn't hire anybody as good for Tennessee at this particular time. He and Jeremy Pruitt are very close. He knows Jeremy Pruitt's defense about as well as Coach Pruitt does. They use the same terminology. And now on this staff defensively, you got Pruitt, you got Steele, and you got Ansley, all who have been defensive coordinators running this defensive system in the Southeastern Conference. That's pretty strong. He's there not to be the defensive coordinator. They have not told it. Well, he hadn't made public. They haven't made public what he's going to be coaching. I think I know what he's going to be coaching. He is not going to be the defensive coordinator. He is not the coach in waiting. He is not the interim coach to be in waiting if they need an interim coach. All that stuff is, again, just barbershop talk.
So many people talk with Tennessee, and it's difficult for a lot of people, as you mentioned, Coach, to separate people in the athletic administration from people that spend money with the university, from people that don't spend a lot of money with the university but think that they have intimate knowledge of what's going on. And you talked about this Sunday on Big Orange Sunday when I was listening, this idea that Tennessee is dysfunctional, that there's a lot of people pulling at it from separate directions, and boosters are doing this, and Philip Fulmer's doing that, and all this is going on. What do you say to that perception about the way things are done right now at Tennessee? Not necessarily in the past, but the way things are done right now with the football program.
Well, it's based on just innuendo and rumor and thinking. It's simply not the way it's done up there. I've been involved in that program one way, shape, or form since 1980 when I went there to be an assistant coach. I've done Big Orange Sunday. This is now the sixth head football coach. I started doing Big Orange Sunday when John Majors was the head coach and done it ever since then. I know the way the system works. I know the way the university is set up. I know that the athletic director reports to the chancellor, period. Are there boosters involved with the university? Absolutely. At the University of Tennessee, though, it's not like it is at other places. Do they have a say? Sure, they're going to put their 2 cents in. But the biggest boosters up there, the ones that, and the only ones that really could affect hiring, they're all under the same umbrella in that they believe in hiring a president who will hire a chancellor, who will hire an athletic director, who will hire a head coach, and letting them do their job. That's the way it works up there. Now, I know there's people out there who think maybe that's not the way it works. That's not to say that someone of the stature of the Haslam family doesn't have a lot of influence. They do. But I've watched Mr. Haslam, Big Jim Haslam, who was the captain of the University of Tennessee football team, and he played on the 1951 national championship team. They hire people and let them do their job, and when they make a decision, they almost 100% back it because that's what they hired them to do.
Doug Matthews with us. We are on the road, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Coming up, there is another, I'll call a free agent coach out there. I'm going to get Doug's take on and just initial thoughts. Also, the reason I would point to as to why so many see this hire from Kevin Steele and automatically feel like it's an interim in waiting. We'll get into this with Doug Matthews coming up on the Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue. You know what? We'll go 4 hours today. Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Doug Matthews with us. Always great having him on. He's presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Doug, take us a step further on why this is a great hire by Tennessee to bring in Kevin Steele to be on the staff with Jeremy Pruitt.
Outstanding hire. I mentioned the fact that he knows this defense inside and out. I mentioned the fact that he's been defensive coordinator, or maybe I didn't mention it. He's been defensive coordinator. He's coached at four different Southeastern Conference programs, all of them championship, have won national championships at one time or the other in the last 25 years. Florida State, Nebraska, He is, I think, what, 62 years old. He is a tremendous, he's not a good recruiter. He is a tremendous recruiter. And if anyone listened to the show Sunday, he is what I call SEC savvy. He knows how to recruit in the Southeastern Conference. He'll be, it's a seamless fit for Coach Pruitt. I have no doubt in my mind, period, that when Coach Pruitt got the job, if Kevin Steele had not been the defensive coordinator at Auburn, he would have been the defensive coordinator at Tennessee. Now, maybe that would have changed a little bit because he was in it for the jobs. But a great, from my viewpoint, a great hire and a seamless fit and a huge, huge staff upgrade for Jeremy Pruitt.
So another defensive coordinator on the staff. I wonder if they would add another one. You certainly know one who is available in John Chavis, who has been a part of your shows. Would he make sense on this staff as well?
He might make sense, but John Chavis will not be going back to Tennessee. That is by choice. Don't think really they've even talked to him about it. For this simple reason, John Chavis is a 4-3 defensive coach. He's not a three-man front guy. He's always been a 4-3 guy. That's what he knows. I have no doubt that Johnny will be coaching somewhere. Very well could be in the pros. But he'll be coaching somewhere, and I would say somewhere in the near future.
I want to get into the details of at least how why I feel like we saw the reaction we did to this hire yesterday with Kevin Steele. And it's because ESPN reported there's a hiring freeze at the University of Tennessee. And if that's true, Jeremy Pruitt didn't make the hire. I mean, I think that's how you make the conclusion that Fulmer or someone else made the hire of Kevin Steele.
Well, first, that's assuming that ESPN knew what they were talking about in a hiring freeze. Mm-hmm. If it was there was a hiring freeze, it would thaw pretty quickly. But I don't know. I hadn't heard anything about it. You know, I had someone call me yesterday and said, "Well, the chancellor had to sign off on it." The chancellor has to sign off on every hiring of anybody that works at the University of Tennessee. That's her job. You know, so. That's much, 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 much ado about something. Was there a I don't know if you want to call it a freeze, fine. It officially wasn't a freeze. And I think what they're doing is, which makes sense, Coach Fulmer was wanting to wait until he got the results back from the in-house compliance investigation before he did anything. That just makes common sense. But obviously, it didn't Kevin Steele signed a contract. So obviously that freeze wasn't maybe quite as solid as some people thought it was. Again, a lot of barbershop talk, and unfortunately ESPN gets in some of that too.
Is it your understanding that the in-house portion of the investigation is over and now it's been turned over, or do you know where that stands at this point?
I do not know. Have no idea. Haven't asked, don't know. I would think it has to be winding up pretty quickly. And maybe it already is. That will go. It will not be made public. It will go from Coach Fulmer to the Chancellor Plowman. They will decide how they're going to decide on exactly what they're going to do. Then it'll be turned over to the Southeastern Conference and then to the NCAA. But might have already happened. I don't know. I'm sure there's going to be something come out of this. One thing, and I'll discuss this in great detail Sunday, Philip Fulmer, there's no doubt in my mind that he has he hadn't told me this, but I got to believe that he has visited with Doug Dickey about this, because Doug Dickey was the master at taking, if you have a problem, getting out in front of it, getting everything worked out, here's what we're going to do from a university standpoint, turned over the SEC, make sure that they approve it, and then move on with it. I'm sure that's the way this is going to be handled. Might already be there, but I don't know.
I think people on the outside are trying to look for abnormalities with the investigation or something going on at Tennessee. What is your understanding of you get alerted to a possible violation, something happens, the university looks into it. What is the normal process or something like this when you're alerted of a possible violation?
Well, first off, there's a reason why there is at least five, and it may have been added too. There is a five-person arm of the athletic department that does nothing but compliance. That's their sole job. And the reason is, if either of the four of us would say, hey, I saw so-and-so down at the coffee shop visiting with a prospect, and it was not, but whatever. If once that is made to the university, they must follow up on it. They have to follow up on it. That's why you've seen in the past, when you see players that it happens primarily in basketball, but it has in football too, where they hold a player out for a game or two, making sure that nothing untoward happened. Because the way the NCAA works and the way the Southeastern Conference works, if you find out about it and do something about it, they're usually going to go along with what you say. But if you don't do anything about it and they find out about it, that's when you get hammered. And I know that's the way it works. And I believe that's what a lot of this was, precautionary. Hey, I've said this the last 2 weeks and said it on the last two Big Orange Sundays. Is there a possibility this could be some very serious stuff? Yes, there's that possibility. I have no reason to believe it is, but there is. And that's what you have to protect against.
Doug Matthews with us. You mentioned Big Orange Sunday, Sunday mornings, 8 a.m. right here on The Zone, the best hour-long discussion on Tennessee athletics. And this week, Doug will be digging into exactly what's going on behind the hire of Pruitt hiring Kevin Steele to his staff and what's to come there and the relationship between the two. Doug, you've been saying since November with us that you've felt strongly that Fulmer wanted Pruitt back. It seems as though people can't believe that Fulmer is bringing Pruitt back after year three.
Yeah, I think there's some people out there, you know, who the great majority is, as you all know and I know, the great majority of people who listen to your shows and my shows, they don't ever call in. They don't call in my show because I don't take calls, but they don't call in. Right. They don't get on Twitter. They don't get on websites and make their feelings known. But certainly there are some out there that do. And I think it's just kind of normal that some people always think the negative. You know, there's some people out there that no matter what Philip Fulmer does as athletic director, he's worthless. There's that they should fire the president and the chancellor, and they should fire everybody. And they should really move UT Knoxville to UT Nashville. You know, there's always something that they want to have done, and none of it's realistic, but you know, it's kind of entertaining to read and listen to every now and then.
Are they sufficiently concerned? Should they be with the optics of all of this?
The optics in regard to the hiring and all that, Paul?
Yeah. Of Pruitt being in limbo because of the investigation of the hiring during what's been called a hiring freeze. I mean, if ESPN reports there's a hiring freeze and there is in fact no hiring freeze, why not get it out there that there is no hiring freeze?
Well, and there may have been I don't know how a hiring freeze would work. For all I know, the university might have a hiring freeze against hiring anybody at the university because of the financial situation up there right now, because of the COVID. I don't know about that. I'm not saying, Paul, just like you and you all, I mean, anytime you all report something, and especially you with your background, you have pretty significant sources that are telling you that, or you wouldn't go with it. Right. And I'm sure ESPN heard that from someone. Remember this too. A lot of this stuff that goes on about coaches, where they're going to go, a lot of that comes from not at that particular university, but you know, people like Chris Lowe, they visit with everyone. You visit with everyone. So you can hear a lot of these things from other universities, from other professional football teams, and you're reporting what you're hearing. So I don't think there's anything untoward about that, but it just doesn't appear to. I know it doesn't come from the athletic director, and I'm fairly sure it doesn't come from the head football coach, because there's no reason. And those are the people that know. It doesn't come from the chancellor's office either, I would suspect.
Let me follow up on Paul's question and ask it to you this way, Coach. Is anything going on right now at Tennessee preventing this coaching staff from doing their jobs based on anything that's happening?
No, it's not. I mean, the whole thing on this is going to come down to, as I mentioned last week on this show, if there is not a major violation, and I'm not talking about going, as I use Sunday, going 55 in a 50-mile speed zone. If there's not a major violation, Jeremy Pruitt will be the head football coach. This athletic director, when he hired him, he very plainly stated to everybody in Vol Nation that it was going to be a 4 or probably a 5 year rebuild to get back to the championship level. It's been 3. Was 3 year a good one? Absolutely not. Were there some things that would cause some concern? Absolutely. But as I said Sunday, here's one thing that you can't argue with. You can argue with it, but you'd be arguing a bad argument. This football team, from a SEC player talent standpoint, is immensely better than it was when Jeremy Pruitt took over. And as I said Sunday, if Jeremy Pruitt's not coaching this team, whoever is coaching this team, interim, outerim, anything, if whoever's coaching the team, they're going to have a heck of a lot more talent to compete with than they had 3 years ago, whoever that coach is. And I believe strongly, again, it's going to be Jeremy Pruitt unless something comes out of this investigation.
Here's something that we've heard. I'm sure you've heard it also. And I want your reaction to this line of thinking out there. Tennessee just isn't committed to football. Look at Auburn. They just fired a 6-4 head coach. They're committed. Look at South Carolina. They just fired a coach during a pandemic. They're committed. But here's Tennessee. They're going to stick with a 3-7 coach. So obviously they're not committed to fixing football and making it something. It's not me saying this. This is something we hear, and I'm sure you've heard it also. But they're clearly not committed to winning in football because of that. What do you say to that line of thinking?
Well, it's ridiculous. David Ubbin had a great piece on The Athletic about all the, I mean, look at what Jeremy Pruitt was given. He was able to hire any assistant coach he wanted to hire. And he was given everything. Let me just put it this way. Every single thing that Jeremy Pruitt asked for from the athletic director, he received. Every single thing. I'm pretty sure that he's probably going to get most of the stuff he asked for. He's probably not asking for much right now, but he's probably going to get that also. But that's bunk. And everybody knows that, everybody knows that. You could say after what Alabama's done the last decade that nobody's committed in this league, because obviously they're not doing anything other than LSU and Auburn occasionally and beating those guys. So that's fun to talk about, but it's not accurate in my opinion.
Doug Matthews with us, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Remember, you can catch Big Orange this Sunday morning at 8 a.m. for more details with Pruitt and Steele and much more with his conversations throughout the week. Outside of the recent hires, I want to get to a few topics here on the way out with you, Doug, some rapid fire. Your thoughts and reaction to the transfer quarterback from Virginia Tech, Hendon Hooker, joining this program. What have you heard about him?
Well, it says a couple of things. Obviously, he feels like that Jim Chaney's going to be coaching him and Jeremy Pruitt's going to be the head coach. Don't know why he would go there if not. He is I think an excellent addition. This will give Tennessee with the high school freshman coming in, 4 quarterbacks there. He is a runner. He gives you he's rushed for, I think, 1,200 yards or so the last couple of years. He's very experienced in big ball games. I don't know that much about him. Haven't watched him. But I would say if they're going to bring him in, and I believe that they would bring in, try to bring in a quality transfer. He's a grad transfer, too, so he didn't have to go through the waiver system. He's got 2 years remaining. And from my strong suspicion is that if they brought him in, they feel like that he's going to be a great addition to this team. Will he be a starter? I don't know. He's been in for spring practice. It should be between Maurer and Bailey and him and the high school kids coming in also. It should be pretty good competition, but we might not even have spring again this year. Who knows?
Maybe not. We'll file this under the category of no-brainer. Al Wilson is going into the College Football Hall of Fame. When you think of Al Wilson, what comes to mind, Coach?
Well, you're right. It is a no-brainer. I coached there for 10 years and know a lot about the history. Tennessee's had some great defensive players. I didn't know some of them well. I don't know Kiner. I know Kiner. Don't know him well. Reynolds, Frank Emmanuel. I don't know that Tennessee has had a better leader that wasn't a quarterback than Al Wilson. I'm sure they probably have that. I don't know about it, but he was a tremendous leader and a big play guy. You know, just the one, you take the Florida game that year, the championship year, just take that one ball game. That was enough to get in a Tennessee Hall of Fame. I don't know about the College Football Hall of Fame. Great player. And from all I've heard about Al Wilson, he is just a solid, upstanding person and will be a great addition to the Hall of Fame from the Tennessee perspective.
And finally, Alabama wins again. Chad had the great line that, you know, they had suffered for 3 years. It had been a while since they won the title.
Such a long, arduous journey back to the top, Coach. Yeah. Those 3 years were really rough on Crimson Tide fans.
And I'm sure there's some people out there saying if they had played Clemson, they wouldn't have won this year. You know, that's kind of the way it goes. You know, the thing, though, I just wanted to say this. Here's what impressed me most about the game. Number one, you know, there was only one turnover in this game. One. And some of the most vicious hitting. I mean, there were some big hits in that ball game. One turnover, and that was kind of a little freak deal where the quarterback, you know, was trying to get the ball turned and didn't. But here's the thing that really impressed me, and I hope everybody associated with coaching looked at this. The one thing when I left that ball game, other than a great game to watch, both those teams, you didn't see any mouthing on the sideline. When a player ran out of bounds, you didn't have five or six guys jump around him and start shoving him and pushing him. You know, coaches doing the same thing. You didn't see him standing over him, you know, flexing all those muscles saying, look what I did. You saw him actually help players up off the ground, pat them on the head, not all the time, but occasionally. You saw great respect there. And at the end of the game, you saw them hugging each other. That's the way college football should be played. And there's one thing that keeps that from happening right now, and that's the head football coaches in this country don't have the guts to tell a player, you do that crap, you're going to go into the dressing room. But those two coaches did. Those two teams played that way. Both those universities, not Athletic Department, but both those universities should be extremely proud of the show that their programs put on. On national TV, and I thought that was I thought that was wonderful.
Doug, based on who you talked to in Knoxville and the relationships you have there, I'm assuming that Big Orange Sunday will be heavily listened to this Sunday morning, as it always is, but a lot to discuss with the new hire of Kevin Steele on the defensive staff.
I'm going to get into that, and I'm going to get into exactly why the Mike Glazer firm was hired, what their job is, and what probably will come out of all this when it's all said and done.
Doug, thank you so much.
Good to be here. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Great. Doug Matthews, man, on the road, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Love having Doug on, and a huge thanks to the Tennessee Highway Safety Office for presenting him each week. Drunk you makes bad decisions, so make a plan before you party. The Tennessee Highway Safety Office reminds you that fans don't let fans drive drunk. 615-737-1045, or number 737-1045, if you would like to jump in. We're going to hit a variety of topics over the next 30 minutes leading up to primary complaint. We can get back into the
it's
Titans.
It's going to be a big complaint day.
Oh, yeah. We can get into the NFL playoffs, our thoughts on the matchups this coming weekend, and much more. Midday on Eddie, delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Day 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Paul, say hello to Paul up on line one.
Hello.
Hello, Paul.
What's up, Paul? I made a prediction several months ago when I heard the Titans got rid of Jarrell Casey that the defense was going to have a really, really hard time that year. I couldn't believe that they let him go. I think maybe that prediction came true. What do you think?
You were correct,
well,
Paul.
The thing that's difficult about it, the thing that makes it difficult is Casey got hurt quickly and we didn't get to see what he did
right.
to overlay it on what the Titans did. if he went to Denver and had a full season and we saw what he did, we could say, boy, if that was with the Titans, or if he dropped off there, we could have said, well, John Robinson was ahead of the curve. So him being hurt complicates the sure. math.
It's what John Robinson didn't do around the Jarrell Casey move. It's not, this isn't a just, well, he went there and got hurt, so it doesn't matter, it didn't affect the Titans. Not having a healthy Jarrell Casey, if he stayed healthy with the Titans, is a downgrade for the Titans. But when the move happened, what was the first thing we said? Now let's see what John Robinson
Clowney
does.
Clowney money. A lot of people said Clowney money. A lot of people said, I'll make that trade. Shift Simmons in there, get Clowney, and I'll take it because Clowney's on the edge, and whether he's sacking people or not, he's disruptive, and it changes the dynamic of that front. And quite frankly, I didn't have that big a beef with that strategy. Now, obviously, backfired on the people that we saw on the field part. Didn't work.
Yeah, but I remember after they traded him, you said they were going to use that money for smaller pieces and not for Clowney.
Well, I thought they were definitely getting out ahead of Casey's downturn.
That's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
But and I'm all for the aggressive mentality of going after Clowney. And all offseason, they openly recruited the guy. They wanted him. And I don't fault them for going out and signing him. Because if they didn't, that would be the topic right now this week as we assess what failed them throughout the season.
That was a go-for-it move.
Yes.
It's hard to downgrade them for a go-for-it move. But I am a little critical that they made some all their go-for-it moves didn't work simultaneously.
Right.
You need – what are the odds that your go-for-it move – Isaiah Wilson should have been starting within a month and dominating. That's a go-for-it move that did not work. Beasley's a reclamation project. Okay, you give some wiggle room for it not to work. Do you give some wiggle room for it not to work on the scale that it didn't work? An absolute zero?
Nope.
On a Vrabel makes no contact with that guy? That's pretty extreme. And then Clowney, you know, some people saw some disruption. I didn't think it was nearly on the scale of what I was expecting. And then he's hurt and gone. Combine all of that, and
when
it's
he
pretty
was
there,
dramatic. But we can point to him getting hurt and all these. I'm just focused on what happened when he was in the lineup and the disruptor. The discussion was he's disruptive, so others around him can make big plays.
Right. And did they?
Let him come close.
No. It didn't have an effect on Simmons, who's the first guy you thought it would have an effect on, right? Clowney's going to draw some attention. Look, Simmons is getting doubled no matter what this year, all year, right? Landry didn't get freed up for anything. Landry was what? The Landry that we know. Landry is a lot like Derek
He's
Morgan.
A second pass rusher.
Well, Paul's prediction turned out to be true about Jarrell Casey affecting the defense, but the top of the list of things that affected the defense was the loss of Dean Pease.
Yes.
We can all agree on that.
And yes. I think second
Dean Pease got more out of little, more out of less than anyone else they could have hired. And losing him and the whole defensive coordinator mess, and I get that Shane Bowen was the defensive coordinator, but they didn't give him the title, all of that BS, that led into it. But the bottom line was they lost a legendary defensive coordinator. They went from a legendary defensive coordinator in Dick LeBeau to a legendary defensive coordinator in Dean Pease, and they went from Dean Pease to no defensive coordinator / Shane Bowen.
Yeah. No, Mike Vrabel,
who Paul is saying is going to be back next year to
severely
be the defensive coordinator.
Severely underestimated the loss of Dean Pease, and I think collectively they severely underestimated the loss of Logan Ryan. Now, it would have been amazing foresight for them to have said, and Logan Ryan, you know, was saying, I'm going to be a safety down the road. Logan Ryan became a safety now, but he was a very good safety who earned himself a 3-year contract in the season.
Well, I mean,
and led like crazy.
I mean, that's not a knock on him, though. No, Vaccaro's a linebacker now.
Right. So, I mean, but they would have had to foresee.
I would have rather have had Logan Ryan
absolutely
at Vaccaro's spot.
Absolutely. But I don't know how much you could say the safety that the Titans should have seen that Logan Ryan would have been a better safety than Kenny Vaccaro at that stage. They should have made that move, and they should have paid him what he gets, 7.5. And at that point, by the time his price came down, He was probably pretty pissed at these guys for not having a conversation.
Well, he signed right before the season.
Could you? Yeah.
Before the season.
Could you have made that happen? I think it's pretty difficult at that stage.
They're not making that.
I think they undervalued his leadership.
They gave away his number quickly.
Yeah.
They were past him.
They were done with him at the end of the season. But did they undervalue his leadership value?
Of course.
Kevin Byard didn't pick it up the way we thought he would. Kenny Vaccaro didn't. They didn't. And if you're collectively
shaking, your head, no, why all the chatter about the lack of communication?
Yeah.
We didn't hear that prior.
No.
We did not hear that prior.
Logan Ryan made that a non-issue.
Woodyard. I mean, there are a number of other pieces.
They had
pieces.
One on every layer.
Yes.
Now, but Woodyard wasn't out there, but he's still a factor. Still a factor.
Absolutely.
Even not being out there. But Casey and Ryan, look, there were massive losses last year, and we knew it was going to be tough, but what did we think? It could be a middle-of-the-road defense, and with this offense, it could be fine. You and I were talking about this. We hadn't brought it up. When Jim Schwartz, when it came out that he wasn't going to be back with a couple games left, Sheil Kapadia from The Athletic, who I worked with at ESPN, wrote about Schwartz, that Schwartz established at Philadelphia that the floor for the Eagles' defense would be middle of the pack. So the Eagles knew that at worst, their defense would be 15th, 16th.
Average.
Often better than that. But
the average is average, right?
Yeah, a bad year, you'd be average.
Right.
That's what the Titans need. A bad year, you'd be average. You can't have a bad year and be 29th. Think about 29th. I mean, you're talking with Jacksonville.
Yeah, you're with the top five teams in the NFL draft.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You, a playoff team, are with the teams that are drafting in the top 10.
I'm not counting Miami. Miami's there because Houston traded the pick.
I think they overvalued their culture structure and didn't give credence to the fact that the culture structure exists because of the players that are in leadership positions.
Right.
And that when you eliminate some of the better players from the locker room, you're going to eliminate some of that culture. And I think that's they're doing the same thing right now with Isaiah Wilson. By allowing him to be on the team.
And we haven't mentioned John Robinson by name.
I do think there's a detriment to that if he comes back next year. Because then you're starting to poke holes in that structure again.
And you're doing it on the good side of the ball. We haven't mentioned John Robinson by name. I mean, the player acquisition this offseason, and the player deacquisition, if you will, was disastrous. He had a terrible year. Now, the year before, he found Jeffrey Simmons and A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown might be his best draft pick. Period.
And I do want to say, yes, we acknowledge they won 11 games. It's remarkable they did that. But I don't apologize for expecting more from an all-time great offense that we've seen here and bowing out on a wild card weekend. I'm not apologizing for having higher expectations than that for this team.
Everybody should have. Everybody.
Yes, everyone.
They certainly did.
Well, I don't think they went home Sunday night and looked back on the successes of the regular season.
Everybody
resting on that.
I mean, everybody goes home disappointed at any point. But this team at this time with its talent, there's no way you could go home.
I mean, Phillip Rivers was in tears after the game.
Well, he may be done.
Yeah. But also, just looking, he thought they were winning a Super Bowl. Like, that was his mindset going into that game in Buffalo. And I'm assuming that's the mindset of the Titans. Their players, at least. Maybe not everyone in that front office.
No, I think...
That's the mindset. It's not to immediately look back and talk about all the successes.
I think the mindset
changed. Be disappointed.
I think you had to change the mentality of, instead of keeping games close and winning by a defensive stop, it was flipped. We're just going to go in a shootout and win 40-37.
We're going to go score touchdowns.
And when they couldn't do that, they were done.
Then what?
I mean,
to the defense's credit, it didn't act like that. Like, oh my God, where are the points? Like,
no, yeah, I mean,
they stayed strong,
but we pointed out this was the best possible first round matchup for them. The run first offense,
it played out exactly.
We've
like
seen
that.
The defense perform well against that offense,
yeah,
and they did it again.
You did your recipe again, it worked. It's not like the Ravens figured you out and busted your formula,
right?
You executed your formula a third time in a row, and you found a way to lose. That's one of those games, like, look. You know me. The result is the result. The win is the win. But the Titans did exactly what they wanted to do defensively.
Midday,
and they held them to 20. All you needed was 21. Not your average of 30. Not the 40 you've gotten all the time. 21. They should have nightmares in the offseason about not being able to get 21.
I would. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue.